You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In response to the question, if you could have one superpower, what would it be? Most people would come up with impossible things like time travel, invisibility, perhaps reading other people's minds. Earlier this year, Michio Kaku, a theoretical physicist and one of the founders of string theory, was a guest on the show, and he told us that all those things may be possible in the not-too-distant future thanks to new technologies. His most recent book is Physics of the Impossible, and we've decided to air that interview again today. I began by asking Michio Kaku about the scientific benefits of studying the impossible.
Well, you know, I'm a physicist, and my day job is to work on Einstein's unified field theory, to get a theory of everything that'll explain everything from the Big Bang to everything we see around us. However, we also have hobbies. And one of my hobbies is to, well, watch science fiction movies like The Terminator and Star Wars and E.T. And we do have the building blocks of physics to answer those questions. So why not?
Is this an extension of the thinking that you've been doing on string theory?
That's right. For example, time travel, believe it or not, is one of the hottest fields in physics right now. And string theory, which is what I do, may actually answer some of these questions, like what happened before the Big Bang? Can time be bent into a pretzel? And can you punch a hole through space? So these are very abstract questions that have a direct impact on what I do for a living, string theory.
But string theory has not yet been proven or disproven, and the scientific community remains split. Why is it taking so long? And are you predicting that string theory will eventually provide us with the theory of everything?
Well, in 2 months, the largest machine of science ever created gets turned on outside Geneva, Switzerland. It is the Large Hadron Collider, 17 miles in circumference, bigger than the city of Geneva. And we hope to produce what are called sparticles with that machine, superparticles, that are nothing but higher vibrations of the superstring.
You would see the strings, the strings that are supposedly vibrate as part of string theory?
Oh, no, the strings are too small to be seen. However, we represent the lowest vibration of this rubber band. We think that we're all made out of tiny little rubber bands. We call them electrons and neutrinos, but they're different vibrations of a little rubber band. And with the Large Hadron Collider, we hope to get the next set of frequencies of these rubber bands. And I should also point out that this machine is not going to gobble up the Earth, as the New York Times claimed last week.
Yeah, they said that a black hole could be created. I'm not sure I want to take the chance. But what would happen in the unlikelihood that it did create a black hole?
Well, I personally take some responsibility for some of that lawsuit. First of all, we hope to produce what I call mini black holes with the machine. They're not dangerous. They're subatomic. You couldn't even light a light bulb with the energy of these particles. And they rain down on the Earth all the time in the form of cosmic rays. But once I had lunch with the producer from the Science Fiction Channel, and I mentioned to him this project of ours to produce microscopic black holes, and his eyes got bigger and bigger. And later he produced a Science Fiction Channel special about an atom smasher which creates a black hole which begins to eat up everything. And I think that became the basis of a lawsuit. Two people in Honolulu got scared, probably watching that Science Fiction Channel special, and won a lawsuit to stop our machine, which is totally harmless. It's even placed underground.
You're calling it our machine. How much of a role did you play in the creation of the Hadron
Collider? Our machine, in the sense that I'm a theoretical physicist, and we are the ones in charge of analyzing the data that'll be pouring out of this machine starting this summer when it gets turned on, a 10 billion euro machine that we hope will prove the outlines of string theory, which we think is the fabled Einstein's unified field theory that he didn't go far enough in terms of completing.
Now, you have divided the impossibilities into three different categories, class one, class two, class three. What are the differences between them?
Well, when we think of invisibility or teleportation or reading people's minds or starships, we say, ha, these are impossible. But I'm a physicist. We can begin to say on what time frame, a decade, several decades, a century, when these impossibilities will become possible. And I found out, much to my surprise, that about 90% of what you see in the science fiction movies is a class one impossibility, possible within a decade to maybe a century. Now, class two impossibilities are further down the line. They include time travel, interdimensional travel. That may require centuries before we can harness that power. And class three impossibilities are just downright impossible. Perpetual motion machines, seeing the future. I get telephone calls from the Wall Street Journal asking me whether this inventor, who is bilking millions of dollars out of investors, can really create unlimited energy for free. So I quote from that great philosopher of the Western world, P.T. Barnum, who once said, quote, "There's a sucker born every minute."
My guest is Michio Kaku, who's the author of the best-selling Hyperspace and now a new bestseller, Physics of the Impossible, a scientific exploration into the world of phasers, force fields, teleportation, and time travel. It is published by Doubleday. Well, I would assume that there were any number of impossibilities in the past that are now not only possible, but commonplace.
That's right. Who would have thought that our grandparents would live in a world where there's no television, radio, jet planes, and here we are talking about technologies that our grandchildren would say are commonplace, like invisibility. We've actually demonstrated the basic principles 2 years ago. Teleportation. We can teleport molecules right now. And telepathy. We can begin to read the outlines of thinking right now. And our grandkids may think this commonplace.
Although in all these cases, it's not done the way we originally imagined. Telepathy is not me sitting next to you and reading your mind. We actually need machines to get that kind of insight.
That's right. We're not talking about mystics. We're not talking about Las Vegas showmen who claim to read minds. We're talking about using the laws of physics to analyze thinking. For example, at Brown University just about 2 years ago, they took a stroke victim who's pretty much paralyzed, pretty much a vegetable. They put a chip in his brain, connected the chip to a laptop, and within 3 hours or so, he could begin to move the cursor and play video games, answer emails, type messages, surf the web, and he is medically paralyzed. So in the future, this could revolutionize the way we deal with paralyzed patients and also even healthy people may one day want to put a microscopic implant, so small you can't even see it, and we'll be able to surf the web by thinking about it.
We actually had John Donahue on the show to talk about that sometime in the past. A number of the things that you've mentioned all came out of Star Trek for some reason. Were they the great predictors?
Well, Roddenberry cheated. He knew about antimatter from the world of physics. He knew about warping of space-time from the work of Einstein. But he introduced antimatter and the warping of space to the general public. And he introduced teleportation because of budget cuts at Paramount Studios.
Beam me up, Scotty, simply was because of a budget cut?
Yeah. According to Roddenberry's memoirs, Paramount Studios said it cost too much money for rocket ships to take off land. So they want to simply beam them and save money. And so the origin of teleportation is budget cuts at Paramount Studio.
So what does the quantum theory say about teleportation?
Well, it's still at the microscopic level, but we've been able to teleport particles of light called photons about 100 miles. That's the world's record set just a few months ago from one Canary Island to another. We're going to teleport photons to the space shuttle pretty soon. These experiments are now in the process of being worked out. After 2020, we'll teleport to the moon. We can do this with atoms as well. Beryllium atoms, cesium atoms, both have been teleported. Within a decade or so, perhaps the first water molecule will be teleported. After that, DNA. The substances of life themselves will be teleported. And that's in the coming years, not centuries.
But you do say that some teleporting has to be put in class two, which means sometime in the further future.
That's right. Captain Kirk consists of 50 trillion cells. That'll take a few centuries before we teleport Captain Kirk. But remember, Star Trek takes place in the 23rd century. Uh-huh. That's plenty of time for us to meet that time frame.
Well, how do you teleport a molecule?
Here's how you do it. Everything vibrates around us. We know that from the quantum theory. And if you have two electrons that vibrate in unison, that's called coherence. If you then separate these two electrons, an invisible umbilical cord connects these two electrons vibrating in unison, such that if you jiggle one, the other one knows somehow that its partner is being jiggled. Now, Einstein didn't like this, but hey, we measure this in laboratory every day. Einstein was wrong. So this is how we get two objects linked together by an invisible umbilical cord. And when we have Captain Kirk in the future, we will have to destroy him in order to create another Captain Kirk on the other side of the room, which creates a problem because this other Captain Kirk has all the memories, all the information, all the neural circuits, genes of the original Captain Kirk. And we just saw the original Captain Kirk being destroyed, but here's this other imposter with exactly the same memory, DNA, genes, claiming that he's the Captain Kirk. So you kind of wonder, where did the soul go when you teleport his atoms?
But this is kind of like cloning, only not like cloning.
Yeah, we're not talking about cloning a child who is genetically equivalent to you. We're talking about creating you. You that has every single atom the same as you, who claims to be you, but is not you.
Let's look at another one of the class one impossibilities. And also that was in Star Trek. Force fields, the sort of thing that the Enterprise put up to protect against attacks from the Klingons. What exactly is a force field?
Well, force fields, believe it or not, even though they seem logical, reasonable.
Yeah, Colgate Gardol was a force field, at least in the ads.
Yeah, it turns out that the four fundamental forces do not allow force fields as we know them. Gravity is attractive, not repulsive. Electricity and magnetism, plastic will go right through a magnet. The nuclear force is very short range on the distance of the nucleus. But a plasma, a piece of the sun, a lightning bolt, what you find inside your TV set, plasmas are hot gases which can mimic force fields. At the Brookhaven National Laboratory in Long Island, they wanted to do welding. Welding works better in a vacuum, but everywhere around us is air. So they created an air pocket that is then kept intact by a plasma wall. And this way you can do welding on the Earth. This is a very neat way to separate the vacuum of space from the inside of the Enterprise, and also a very nice way to save money on building airlocks for your Hollywood set. So we can do this now. We can create plasma walls, walls of hot gas that will, in principle, vaporize anything that comes in contact with it, separate air from a vacuum.
But it won't give us something like the hoverboard in the movie Back to the Future or hovercraft, the cars that are supposed to hover.
They're possible in another way. If we can create room temperature superconductors, they don't exist yet. It would not only initiate a second industrial revolution, but we could have supermagnets for free. We could have a belt of magnetism that would allow us to fly like Superman. We would have magnetically levitating trains, maglev trains. We have them, but they're very expensive. And flying cars would become a reality. Now, to be honest, we have not yet created room temperature superconductors in the laboratory. We need liquid nitrogen to cool down a substance to get it before superconducting. But one of these days, some inventor is going to get room temperature superconductors, and we're all going to fly like Superman and jet to our work like the Jetsons.
My guest is Michio Kaku, the Henry Simat Professor of Theoretical Physics at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York and co-founder of String Field Theory, author of a number of books, and the most recent one is a bestseller. Look on the New York Times bestseller list. Rare that you'll see a book with the word physics in its title on the bestseller list, at least a nonfiction book with the word physics. This one is Physics of the Impossible, a scientific exploration into the world of phasers, force fields, teleportation, and time travel, published by Doubleday. We're back with Michio Kaku. His latest book is Physics of the Impossible, published by Doubleday. And you told me you thought that it might be impossible for a book like this to hit the bestseller list. So anything is possible, Michio.
That's right. It hit number 12 on this Sunday's New York Times bestseller list. And who would have thought that there are that many people who see Star Wars and Terminator and E.T. and want to know why? Is it really possible that any of these things can come to fruition?
Let's talk about invisibility. What advances have made physicists consider the possibility of invisibility devices?
Well, as late as 2 years ago, I used to teach in my optics class that invisibility was impossible. In fact, every textbook on the planet Earth says that invisibility is impossible. And yet, 2 years ago, all of us had egg on our face when the scientists at Duke University proved the principle of invisibility in the laboratory. They can take an object, shine microwave radiation at it, and make it disappear. Now, with
visible light, we see right through it?
Light goes around it, then reforms at the other end, like river water going around a boulder. If you're downstream from a boulder, you don't know that there's a boulder upstream because water has wrapped around it. Now, we physicists say that light cannot do that. Light cannot wrap around an object and reform at the other end, making the object invisible. We were wrong. 2 years ago, it was demonstrated, and now at Caltech, just a few months ago, visible light, not microwaves, but visible light was shown to bend in a way consistent with invisibility. This is really hot. There are many groups now racing to get the Harry Potter invisibility cloak.
Well, Einstein said that light bends, but and nobody wanted to believe that either, but that has been a scientific fact for a long time.
That's right. But bending naturally just by an object that just sits there in front of you, that was thought to be impossible.
What are metamaterials?
Now, metamaterials is the substance that bends light in this impossible way. Now, metamaterials consist of tiny impurities, tiny little implants inside a substance. Each little implant kicks the wavefront in a way such that the wavefront moves in a way once considered impossible. And that's how it works. With visible light, you have to use tiny etching technologies that we use for transistors. And we can create transistors, millions of them, that sit on your fingernail. We use that same technique now to create metamaterials that can bend visible light in an impossible way. And it's no accident that the Pentagon is funding this research. I mean, hey, they're not stupid.
Now, you are a co-founder of the string field theory, which posits that there are a lot more dimensions than most people have thought in the past. I remember the comic books. People would become invisible by leaving our three-dimensional world and going to the fourth dimension.
That's how H.G. Wells envisioned it in his very first novel about this, The Invisible Man. If you read the book very carefully, the secret of invisibility is not a chemical like in Hollywood movies. It's that he floats above us in a parallel universe. Two sheets of paper. We're on the bottom sheet. He's on the higher sheet, floating above us, and light goes right underneath him so that he is therefore invisible.
So that's a lot cleverer, actually, from H.G. Wells than from all of the people who had Claude Rains drink some chemical.
That's right. And we now think, by the way, that dark matter, an invisible substance that actually makes up most of the universe, could in fact be invisible matter floating just above us in hyperspace. This has not been proven yet, but if there's a galaxy floating just above us, light would go underneath the galaxy. We would feel its effects, so it would be detectable with gravity detectors, but it would be invisible. That fits the description of dark matter, which makes up 23% of the universe, while us, the higher elements, make up only 0.03% of the universe.
So we would have other galaxies that we can't see that are... I thought we could see practically into the beginning of time, into the Big Bang.
Yeah, but much to our shock, in the last decade, it's come to be that surrounding the galaxies that we're familiar with, there's a halo. The halo is 10 times bigger than the galaxy itself. It is made out of dark matter. And the Hubble Space Telescope has given us maps of this dark matter, which is invisible. Light goes through it like light goes through the glasses of your lens. Your lens are also invisible, but you can see your lens because light bends as it goes through your glasses. In the same way, the Hubble Space Telescope has given us gorgeous maps of dark matter. And the leading theory to explain dark matter is that it's the higher vibration of the superstring. That's the latest theory.
I heard that a ray gun has actually been developed recently. So these are no longer class one. They are reality?
Well, there's a catch. At our physics department at City College, we can produce trillion-watt lasers, lasers that have power that's unimaginable for the average person, trillion-watt lasers. However, there's a problem. We can blast through concrete and steel, but you have to have, like, a nuclear power plant behind you to give you this energy. You cannot go into a battle in Star Wars with a nuclear power plant on your back. What you need is a portable power pack, and that does not exist. That's the reason why we don't have lightsabers. That's the reason why we don't have ray guns in warfare, because we do not yet have a portable power pack that you could put into your hands. The laser we have, the power we have, the battery we don't.
Related to this topic, you talk about magnetic confinement. What's that?
Well, fusion could be a source of energy in the next 40 years. We're not sure, but the French have gotten the contract for the ITER fusion reactor, and there are two ways of getting fusion. Fusion is the energy of the sun. That's why the stars shine, because they fuse hydrogen together. One is you can shoot laser beams at a small pellet of hydrogen-rich material, essentially creating a mini hydrogen bomb in a laboratory. The second is to squeeze it with magnetism. The French have opted for the magnetic way. They're trying to squeeze the gas with magnetism, and they're betting the store on this. They are betting that this will solve the energy crisis in 30 to 40 years.
Well, we heard about fusion success some years back. What was it, 20 years ago or so, from Utah, and that turned out to be not true.
That was a dud.
So was that something that would have been easily disproved?
Yes. Cold fusion was what the press ran with. We physicists said, ha, it obviously violates the laws of the quantum theory, and we were right. There were chemists who did that experiment with cold fusion. They didn't understand quantum physics, and we quantum physicists immediately pointed out the defect in their problem. If they had attained fusion, neutrons would have come out that would have killed them. The very fact that they were alive meant that the experiment was wrong.
Michio Kaku's latest book is called Physics of the Impossible, a scientific exploration into the world of phasers, force fields, teleportation, time travel. It is published by Doubleday. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We talked earlier about telepathy and about a chip in the brain that allowed somebody to actually move objects. But what about the MRI brain scans that can reveal what a person is thinking in some cases? But I think that they can spot whether somebody's lying or not.
This is coming really fast, and it's going to be subject to a court case this year. When you tell a lie, you have to, first of all, understand the truth, understand the cover-up of the truth, and then understand the consequences of the cover-up. That requires a lot of energy, and energy is what we measure with the MRI brain scan. Therefore, it's quite easy to see that someone is either anxious or telling a lie. This is about 98% accurate on college students. The numbers vary depending upon the test. And this year, someone's going to go to court saying that he did not set fire to his building. The insurance companies refused to pay the insurance claim. He's going to go to court, have his brain scanned in court to prove that he did not set fire to his own house.
Now, the MRI was an impossibility at one point. I spoke to one of the developers of it many years ago, and he said that when he proposed it and said that the body would react to magnetic, powerful magnetic forces, and you'd see the cells change as a result, that he was told that he was crazy. It was a stupid idea.
Yeah, that's
idea.
Professor Ernst, who won the Nobel Prize. Actually, when I was in high school, he was my high school supervisor. I worked at Varian Associates, and Professor Ernst was my boss. I lost contact with him, and then many decades later, he won the Nobel Prize for the MRI machine, which, of course, has revolutionized medicine and will revolutionize telepathy, because we're going to be able to read thought patterns, have a one-to-one dictionary of thought. Certain MRI patterns correspond to certain thinking patterns, and we'll have a dictionary of thought.
Wow, I'm not sure I want somebody to be able to do that to me. Another thing that you talk about here, class one impossibility, advanced robots of the sort that Arthur Clarke was talking about in 2001?
Well, robots are possible, but right now the most advanced robot has the collective intelligence of a cockroach, a stupid, retarded, lobotomized cockroach. On Mars, our robots can barely recognize a rock. Even a cockroach can recognize a rock, go around it, find mates, hunt for food, hide. Our most advanced robots can't do that. But it is a class one impossibility. By late this century, perhaps we'll have robots as smart as a dog or a cat or maybe a monkey.
Well, we don't want HAL, of course. Now let's get into a couple of class two impossibilities, traveling the speed of light, which, of course, Einstein's theory of relativity says is an impossibility.
Yeah, that's the special theory of relativity of 1905. But then in 1915, Einstein came out with a more powerful theory which contained a loophole which he himself acknowledged. And this is the possibility of a wormhole, a hole in space. In 1935, Albert Einstein and his student Nathan Rosen introduced the wormhole, sometimes called the Einstein-Rosen Bridge, named after its founders. This is the looking glass of Alice. Remember that Alice took her hand through the looking glass, and her hand wound up in Wonderland on the other side of the universe. Well, this is what we think a wormhole looks like. It looks like a looking glass. And we think we can actually see some of these things in outer space. Black holes, we used to think, are nothing but a dot where if you fall into one, you die. That's not true. That's the old picture. We now know that black holes are spinning very rapidly. We've seen thousands of them. Go to NASA.gov and you have gorgeous photographs of spinning black holes. Black holes collapse to a ring, not a dot, a ring, such that if you fall through the ring, it's like going through the looking glass of Alice. In fact, the ring is exactly mathematically equivalent to the ring, the looking glass of Alice in Through the Looking Glass.
So that would we would travel faster than the speed of light if we went through a black hole.
Right. Now,
but if we really want to take space travel seriously, we're going to have to learn how to harness this, aren't we?
That's right. Again, this is a class two impossibilities centuries away. The problem with going through a spinning black hole is that it's a one-way trip. You have what are called the event horizon, the point of no return. It's a roach motel. You check in and never check out again.
I don't think I like that idea.
Yeah. However, 20 years ago at Caltech, a new solution was found of Einstein's equations, which are transversible. These are the transversible wormholes. You can Google that and see hundreds of papers written by physicists on transversible wormholes. You can go back and forth between us and a distant point in space and time. Now, these are very difficult to build. Blueprints of them have been published in the literature. We discussed various blueprints for these things, but they're for a pretty advanced civilization, hundreds, maybe 1,000 years more advanced than us.
What about time travel? Hasn't time travel to the future been experimentally verified on the subatomic level?
Yeah, when you locate your position with a rent-a-car, that satellite up there is journeying into the future. A microsecond into the future after about a year. But our astronauts do this as well. In outer space, time beats a little bit faster in outer space and on the moon. Time actually beats faster on the moon than on the Earth. And we measure this regularly. The GPS system would fail without Einstein's theory. And it shows that these objects go into the future. So in the future, travel is not so dramatically interesting. Backward travel, that's the interesting thing.
Is that possible?
We think so, yes. Stephen Hawking spent many a year trying to disprove this, saying that there are no tourists from the future taking his picture. But he has since changed his mind. And 10 years ago, he said yes. He gave up the ghost. He said, yes, time travel is possible. Not necessarily practical, but possible.
The Arnold Schwarzenegger scenario. Then, you know, you come back from the future and you become governor of California.
That's right. So, yes, it is possible that you could go backwards in time, meet your teenage mother before you're born, and if she falls in love with you, you're in deep doo-doo because you cannot be born if your teenage mother just fell in love with you.
You said at the beginning that the class three impossibilities are really impossible. And in that, we have perpetual motion machines. What else?
Also, precognition, that is, seeing the future. Now, we thought that if you had a time machine, maybe you can see the future. But we found ways of actually establishing cause and effect, even with time travel. Einstein said that time is a river that speeds up and slows down. We've measured that. But the new wrinkle is that we think that the river of time can have whirlpools, and the river of time can fork into two rivers. So if you go backwards in time and meet your parents before you're born and shoot them, then how can you be born if you just killed your parents before you're born? What happens is you go from one time stream perhaps to another time stream, and you meet someone who is genetically equivalent to your parents as youths, but they are not your parents. Your parents really did give birth to you. You cannot alter your own past because that would create a time paradox. You simply shot somebody else's parents, but not your own.
Now, you're suggesting that psychics really can't see into the future.
Cannot see into the future. That's right. Because otherwise, why would they be selling their fortunes for $5 a pop? They should be Wall Street billionaires because they can outsmart Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. So we physicists think that reading the future, that is, looking at the tea leaves and looking at people's palms, you cannot see the future that way.
Of all of the impossibilities that you list in class one, which ones do you think we will see put to practical use first?
I think probably two things, invisibility and telepathy. Given the number of people working on the subject, given the rate of breakthroughs, which is phenomenal, I have to go on the web just to keep track of all the breakthroughs being made in invisibility, plus the Pentagon is funding it. It's no longer a backwash of physics. It's now center stage, and groups are racing to create the first invisibility cloak for visible light.
Just one more thing before you go, and this is not in your book, but I was fascinated by a recent issue of Discover magazine in which they discussed what some theoretical physicists have been positing about what happened before the Big Bang, because we only go back to the Big Bang, and some people say, well, that's where it really begins, although it's hard for us, for most people, to imagine time starting at some point. A number of people are saying, well, it didn't. And they're coming up with some pretty radical ideas. Would string theory be connected to that?
Definitely. Because of string theory, we speculate about these things. We think our universe is a soap bubble of some sort. We live on the skin of the soap bubble. We're like flies trapped on flypaper. And the bubble is expanding, says all the data. However, we now believe that there are other bubbles out there. We believe in a multiverse of soap bubbles. So the multiverse is like a bubble bath. Bubbles popping into existence, popping out of existence, budding, sprouting, creating baby universes. So there are three ways of looking at the world before the Big Bang. One is that our universe budded or sprouted from a baby, from a parent universe. Our universe started off as a baby universe. Another possibility is that two soap bubbles collided, giving us what is called the Big Splat Theory, being published by the physicists at Princeton University. I like to prefer that the bubble came out of nothing. Universes out of the vacuum itself. These are the three types of theories being looked at. And because Einstein's equations are useless at the instant of the Big Bang, you have to use string theory. String theory is finite. It takes you into the world before the Big Bang. It is the only theory which can do that, by the way. And therefore, we can now look at the world before the Big Bang, and we will test some of these theories in 2014. We're going to launch a satellite called LISA, a laser satellite, that'll give us baby pictures of the instant of creation itself.
Now, just one more question before you go. So what happens if the Hadron Collider doesn't wind up proving string theory? Will you feel like, wow, I've just wasted an incredible amount of time and energy?
No, because it's a long shot that the Large Hadron Collider is powerful enough to produce particles. Our machine was to be called the Super Collider outside Dallas, Texas. Much more powerful. It had a really good shot at producing particles.
But nobody wanted to come up with the money to build it?
Well, on the last day of hearings, one congressman asked a physicist, will we find God with this machine? He flubbed the question and the machine was canceled. I would have answered it differently. I would have said, God, by whatever signs or symbols you ascribe to the deity, this machine will take us as close as humanly possible to his or her greatest creation, Genesis. This is a Genesis machine. Unfortunately, we said we will discover another subatomic particle. All the jaws hit the floor, $11 billion for another god darn subatomic particle, and it was canceled the next day.
Michio Kaku's latest book is Physics of the Impossible, a scientific exploration into the world of phasers, force fields, teleportation, and time travel, published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Glad to be on.